that you are having today is from Honorable Van der Merwe. She's not well. She was in Germany. She just came last night. So she says she's not feeling well today. She's going to consult a doctor. Maybe she can join us tomorrow. But even tomorrow, she won't join us, I think, in the morning, because she will be leading the SASA debate in the afternoon in the House. If you remember, it was the ISP that proposed the motion for that debate. So she might join us, or she might not join us. And it's up to political parties that if they want to send another person, that they need us to co-opt, they should have liaised with us. But for now, she didn't inform me of any person that will be coming to the committee. And I think because we know that we are 11, and we have agreed in the previous meeting that it's not all of us that are going to ask questions, and I think we need to agree now that we've got 45 minutes, and 25 minutes is set for the candidates to respond to our questions. And we then have 20 minutes to divide amongst ourselves. But in terms of the minutes, when we were calculating the minutes with our staff members, we thought that maybe it will be proper if we give 3 minutes for each member, meaning that means it's five people who are going to ask questions if we give each member 3 minutes. Because if you look at the 5 minutes that it will be there, that means it will be the chair welcoming the candidate, reassuring the candidate, and asking a question to the candidate. So, but I think we need to be flexible. I know that asking a question is not like you are debating. There's nothing wrong if you sponsor your 1 minute to another member. If you agree, we then can then adopt that and we move on, so that we can at least stick to our time. I have Tembagazi Mpapela on my right hand side, who will be assisting me in terms of timekeeping. So that is my proposal, Honourable Members. Can I hear from you before we go to the agenda? That is my proposal. Honourable Maluleke?
Thank you, Chairperson. I agree with your proposal.
Okay. Honourable Van der Stander?
Madam Chair, we will go with what you say, except I just want to put it on record that that was not the decision of the last meeting, where we said we would not prevent any member from asking a question. But, of course, members must be disciplined with their time.
Yeah. I think in the last meeting we were agreeing on 2 minutes. That's what we proposed. But when we are calculating the minutes with the staff, we saw that it's not going to be possible. It's only 2 minutes. So the best thing, let's say, each member must get 3 minutes. That means it's 5 people, but there's nothing wrong if you sponsor your 1 minute to another member. So I don't think there's any faint match. So I think we agreed in the last minute, that the interviews are not to crucify candidates. All what we want to see from candidates is that do they understand what is their role and what is that office entails, so that we can be able to select the best candidate who will be up to the task in terms of that office. So we're agreeing, Honourable Members. I'm sure with those few ways, the agenda is before us. Apologies, we have already done with the apologies. Let's do the introduction. Honourable Members will introduce themselves, and any guest that is in the House will introduce himself or herself. But I'm hoping that there are no guests in the interview. Let's introduce ourselves. My name is Nonhlanhla Ncube-Ndaba. I'm the chairperson of this ad hoc committee. On my left-hand side, I've got Neliswa Nobatana, who's the committee secretary. I've already introduced Tembakazi. And Christel. I think that's Wilma's interpreter.
That's the other sign language interpreter. Unfortunately, the other one resigned, so I'll have different sign language interpreters during the week. That's Franz Bordeso, my former sign language interpreter.
Okay.
In Parliament.
You're welcome. Okay. Honourable members.
Sorry, Chairperson. I didn't realize that you're starting on the side. My name is Dori Muruga. I'm the member co-opted to this committee. I'm a member of Parliament. Thank you.
Morning, Chair, honorable members. My name is Thabo Manyoni. I'm the member of the committee.
Dumela. Wabulela Muke, Joyce Maluleke. Molelo kwa committee.
Siyabonga Chairperson, igama lami ngukhulunje Majeke, member ye ad hoc committee. Siyabonga.
Sanibonani, niyalazi igama lami. Igama lami ngusibongile akhawula. Ngishintshana noSibongile. Siyabonga.
Good morning. My name is Pinky Kik and I'm a member of the committee.
Terry Standard, member of the committee.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Nomsa Machese. I'm the member of the committee.
Maneo Druchen, member of the committee. And voicing for me, interpreter Trudy Tennyson and my other interpreter, Francois Daisel. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Nzondi Lenobana from PMJ.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I think we need to check with Neliswa if the candidates are here. Are we ready? And check if honorable members are ready. Just wait, ne? And check if honorable members are ready. Honorable Mabelitake.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question was, our seating arrangement, where is the seat for the candidate?
Usabona amanzi angekho nje sihlalo nami ngibona abantu bami bengekho la. Usabona amanzi engekho nami abantu bami abekho, kanti umohwe mohwe wathi uzobopha abantu la ephalamende.
Can you check where is the person who must interpret for the namanzi neliso ne ngibona ngathi ama
concerns me that you were the one who instructed everyone in this committee that we were going to start on time and be absolutely non-negotiable in time management. And supporting services have known about this committee. It's been on the agenda and the dates for the interviews have been here a long time. So far we are half an hour behind schedule. So I think it must just be noted that it is very unfortunate and somewhat unacceptable that we are still awaiting score sheets and such. But I know you are stressed and trying. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Herman, at least our legal person is here, Herman. Can the two gentlemen introduce themselves? because for now, oh, there's another one. I think there are three. Can you please introduce yourself?
Paul Herman from News 24, I'm from the media.
My name is Maba Pucha. I'm representing Zanzi Online.
From Gender Commission.
How long are we going to wait for the score sheets? But your earlier suggestion that we continue with our interview and record our scores and we'll transfer them on the score sheet when they come. I think we should start because we are going to be late.
If you look at our score sheets, you can see that they don't have names, eh? But they've got numbers. So these numbers represent the candidates as they are written on our list.
On this one.
Yeah, on this one. Ne?
Yes,
yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think our first candidate is Mr. Saba Ahmad Jeff Bay. Ne? But he said his name is Jazz.
Chair, I'm a bit concerned with this score sheet. Can we ignore the little part? Because it's not going to be related to our questions, because we never discussed this score sheet before.
The
top part, yeah, the motivation, strategic leadership, innovation, teamwork, planning, organization. Because if you were to follow that, then we have to have questions that are specific to that, and we don't.
Yeah, right.
Can you just want to just ignore that?
Yeah. But obviously, when you
Jefferson, I'm very concerned that you are really dating going around the world. I understand that we would like to do away with the top part, but my understanding is that strategic leadership will be amongst the questions that we are asking, and then you can score it.
Yeah. Honorable Namsa, if you look at the top part that you want us to remove, as I'm reading it now, if you remember, when we were preparing for questions, we said we are not going to have specific questions, but as members will be asking the candidates questions, these are the other things that we need to look at. So whatever questions that you are going to ask, when you need to align it to these. Remember, when you do an interview, Vele, these are the qualities or yes, that you are looking for from a person. Ne? Yeah. Honorable Lokolo.
Diabolena Sihlalo, I think that it's important just to note once again that in addition to the time that we've wasted to a deal with administration, we should have been presented with the scorecard beforehand in one of our previous deliberations. And I think that in that case, I agree, we must continue with this template, but I just think that this committee could have done more pre-planning. And all of these documents and things like that should have been presented to the committee in advance so that when we are presented this, we are not having this discussion.
Yeah.
We've agreed on it already. We've agreed on the time. We've agreed on that kind of thing. Diabolela. Siyamoshe
Kwaesha. I think we're 5 minutes late.
So we don't have the name. One is number one.
Yeah, one is number one.
Can we get our first condition? Oh.
The gentleman at the back is Kumbuzo, ne? Who's one of the senior managers here in Parliament. And can you also introduce yourself? I forgot your name.
Good morning. Chanel Sabi from Human Resources.
Oh, okay.
I was requested to attend this.
Okay, thank you very much. Mama Jack.
I just want to double check. Here, wait till candidates, do we write numbers?
But there's nothing wrong if you write what you can, whatever answer, the response that you get from a candidate on the site first. So then later you'll give marks, so that you cannot make mistake on the score sheet. Yeah. Welcome, Mr. Dev.
Thank you very much, ma'am.
Yeah, just relax. There's a bottle of water there. I think there's nothing that is going to scare you. We are honorable members. I will first start by introducing ourselves. My name is Nontlantla Ngubendaba, who is the chairperson of this ad hoc committee. On my left-hand side, I have my committee secretary, Neliso Nobatana. And on my right-hand side, I have Tembagazi, who will be my timekeeper for today. And honorable members can introduce themselves. Before, I think the gentleman who's sitting at the back with the black suit is Mr. Chabalala, who's one of the managers here in Parliament. And the lady who's sitting next to you is from Human Resource Department. And at the back there, there's a gentleman who's a legal team member. And then there are other staff members. There are interpreters for one of our members. And okay, there's also media. You must know that we are live, ne? So you have only 25 minutes to respond to our questions, and feel free.
Thank you.
Yeah. Honorable members, can you please introduce yourself?
Good morning. My name is Dori Murutwa. I'm a member of this committee.
Good morning, Chairperson, members, our candidate. My name is Thabo Manyon. I'm the member of the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Baba Ahmed. I am Mrs. Maluleke, DJ, member of this committee.
morning. My name is Nokolis Mateke, member of this committee.
Sanbonani. Nam ngiyilungela leli committee. Ngiyabonga.
Good morning. My name is Pinky Kikan, a member of the committee.
Terry Stander, aka Nokolo, member of the committee.
Good morning, sir. My name is Nomsa Machizi, and I'm a member of this committee.
Woman Neo Druchen, member of the committee, and my sign language interpreter voicing for me is Trudy Tennyson. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, honorable members. Mr. Vez, tell us about yourself. Who are you? And why do you think you are the suitable candidate for this position?
My name is Habir Ahmad Jazbai. I am an attorney. I have been in practice for 37 years. I have a BA, LLB, LLM degree. Currently, I am a part-time commissioner at the CCMA. And I love to do what I do with a passion that it deserves, regarding that we are in a constitutional enterprise that requires people of passion, hearts, and heads. And it's a pleasure if I am chosen to be the if I'm successful candidate, then I can assure you that I come with 37 years of legal experience behind me, and I can contribute a lot towards achieving the goals set by the United Nations, particularly regarding achieving equality of women at every sphere of our constitutional democracy.
Okay. Ma'am Story, so you're going to raise your hand, ne? For as long as we know. Ma'am Story, Honorable Namsa, Honorable Maleke, Honorable Kekane, and Honorable Majeki, and Sanstande. How many are you now? Are you five? I said, yeah. I started by Mam Stor. We're already busy with the candidates now.
Madam Chair, my question relates to the candidates in that, is it fair that we ask five questions at once, or should each member be able to pose the question and get an answer? Otherwise, we might need to provide the candidate with a pen and paper to allow him to properly get a gist of the... Can we ask one question and then the answer at the same time, please?
Yeah, no, that's how he's going to do it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Mr. Jess.
Good morning, ma'am.
I think me and you are going to be on friendly terms because we are almost the same age.
Well, one is a beauty and one is a beast.
Yes.
I won't say who's the beast.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that you have been practicing for 37 years. Although somewhere, somehow it was written 26 years. Maybe there was something wrong back then.
I was admitted an attorney actually in 1982.
So that you'll be answering after. Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just want to know from you, you are privy to the Act.
I am.
Especially the Section 11.
Yes,
if you can wait for the Honourable Member to finish her question.
Which illustrates the powers and functions of the Commission. And I see on your CV where it records the commitment to human rights. Somewhere on the bullets, you presented a paper on local and international conference dealing with inter alia domestic violence, family law, matrimonial law, women and children's rights. Now, when we come to Section 11, if you remember or you can recall, somewhere where it says you should evaluate a specific any system of indigenous law and customs of practices or any other law. I'm talking here about Ubuntu in terms of the rights of women. What is your opinion? I know that it is with the law reform at the moment, but I would like to hear from you if you are elected to be a CDE commissioner. What is your opinion on that?
Well,
thank
you very much. Thank you for the question, ma'am. I really appreciate that question. The principle of Okutwala, if I remember very carefully, I've been following this for quite a while, being involved in the Human Rights Committee of the Law Society of South Africa, as well as the Law Society of KwaZulu-Natal. What concerns me is the fact that we have to understand the customs of any particular indigenous group, and to ameliorate that would our constitutional values. Now, particularly, I'll tell you why. Ever since South Africa has been a signatory to KIDAW, the Convention for Elimination of Discrimination Against Women, I feel very strongly that particular practice should be somehow ameliorated and brought into line with our constitutional values.
You're done, ma'am, 3 minutes?
Yeah, I think I'm done.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sir, can you tell us what you understand by CGE and what is it that is expected of the commissioner of this body?
Well, the Commission for Gender Equality plays a very pivotal role, as I explained to you earlier on, in eliminating gender-based discrimination. I just want to digress for a minute. For example, page 4 of the Cape Times today, it mentioned that almost women earn 78% less than men. And says that women do 2.5% more work than men, unpaid work. It also talks about the pay gap, which is roughly about 28%. And it says that if women are brought into line with equality in the workplace and every society, they can bring something like $26 trillion into the world economy. So I believe, yes, the Commission for Gender Equality has a tremendous role to play towards achieving, to bringing those aspects into reality. And how do you do that? Is by educating and by being more activist. I'll give one classical example, and I appreciate this. The Commission of Gender Equality has been amicus curiae in two cases. One was the Bannatyne case regarding maintenance, and the other one was regarding the BHE, okay, BHE versus the municipality, the Master of High Court in Pietermaritzburg. Basically, both these cases involved women in that were treated in inferior positions, and of course, the Constitutional Court in both those cases gave a physical picture to what is now known as women's rights, brought into reality.
Okay, sorry, Mr. Jess.
No problem.
Are you done?
I am done. Just one point I'd like to make out. For example, there was a famous case in Cape Town, Hassan versus Jacobs, where, again, the gender-based situation of a woman that worked all her life, and she, in terms of the old apartheid laws, she couldn't own a property. And so therefore her property was transferred to her husband. And when he died, of course, he had children from a previous marriage. They inherited. The matter went to the Constitutional Court. And the Constitutional Court, Chief Justice Ismail at that time, very carefully articulated the right of dignity, the right of equality under our law. If we don't do that, then obviously our Constitution is a worthless piece of paper. That is basically what he was talking about. And I believe that the Commission here has this role to play. And I'm ready for it.
Okay. Okay, Honorable Nomsa.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Jez, you know, you come from labor law, and now all of a sudden you have interest in gender matters. I just want to find out why the sudden interest in gender issues, and also there was a case recently in KwaZulu-Natal whereby young virgin learners were afforded bursaries on conditions that they are virgins, and also on conditions that they stay as virgins in order for them to continue to with the, to you know receiving this bursary. What are your views on that? Because it was a case that was dealt with by CGE, but I just would like to find out how would you have dealt with, were you the commissioner at that time?
Well, let me explain to you, first of all, my interest in gender-based equality didn't start recently. It has been part of my exercise since 1994, when I did my master's degree in constitutional litigation. Amongst the interest factor was this concept of equality. I believe in what is known as substantive equality. To answer your question regarding the issue of these virgins, the remaining virgins, the bursary, I think that was very insensitive. I believe that it was really wrongly handled. Like many of our customary practices, etc., I think there's a lack of education as to what is expected in our constitutional democracy. And that is where I believe that the Commission can play a substantive role in achieving this ideal. Otherwise we are going to be spending another 20 years trying to educate people. And coming from where I come from, the province of KwaZulu-Natal, I was not the commissioner at the time. I was in the committee of the Human Rights Committee of the Natal Law Society, as well as Law Society of South Africa. We made an input, and we regarded that as an abomination. We thought that that would be an insult to the very concept of human dignity and the freedom and the bodily integrity of every individual.
Honorable Nomsa, you done? Okay. Honorable Gekane?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Mr. Jess, are all our departmental budgets engendered? And is our monitoring and evaluation tool assisting us in ensuring that women not only benefit through social spending, but they too are central in the economic activities of our government?
Sorry, I missed your question, ma'am.
I'm saying, are all our departmental budgets engendered? Or is our monitoring and evaluation tool also assisting us in ensuring that women not only benefit through social spending, but they too are central in terms of all the economic empowerment in our government spending?
I'll admit I am a bit weak on that area regarding budget, etc. But I do believe that there is scope in the departments to allow for women to contribute, and funds have to be made available for that. That's my understanding of your question.
Honorable Kakan, are you done? Oh, okay. Honorable Mateke.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. James, am I pronouncing it correctly?
Well, I had various variations of that pronunciation, but I think all of you did very well. It also makes it very easy to pronounce on a tongue.
Okay. My question is, what do you consider to be the necessary principles, practice, and standards in order to ensure for a culture to be supportive of gender equality? That's one. Also measuring and adhering and incorporating these into risk management, performance management, and disclosure mechanisms as a commission?
As a commissioner, I would look at the first, what does our constitution ask of us? Remember, the constitution is an aspirational document, right? It aspires to achieve a sense of human dignity, equality, freedom, amongst those, and these are the foundational values that constitute a seamless web in our constitution. I believe that as a commissioner, as a commission, as part of a commission, if I am so chosen, my situation would be to enhance the very concept that you raised. I believe that principally we have to become more proactive in the public, visible in the public sphere. And that, regarding risk management, I also believe that we need to ensure that the very values that drive the agenda, the functions, and the constitutional remit of this constitution are followed to a practical level. Thank you.
Mama Cheke,
you have not covered me when it comes to disclosure measurements.
I would be honest to say that I haven't looked at that situation carefully. But as I said, I'm willing to learn. I'll be honest. I don't want to waste this committee's time with waffling out an answer. I don't want to do that.
Honorable Kaula.
Ngibonge Sihlalo. Ngikhulise Mr. Jeff, ngikhuluma isiZulu ke mina, ngavotelwa abantu njengoba ngiyena. Yani futhi ngisibonile la sibhalile. No, bengifuna ukwazi la ukuthi uthini ngala macala angaka.
Sorry, Mama Kaula, Herman, you'll interpret for now, ne? Until the interpreter comes in.
I got those parties. Ngiyabonga Hlalo. Ngifuna ukwazi ukuthi uthini ngalamacala okuhlukunyezwa kwabantu besifazane ngokocansi, abanye babulawe kakhulukazi emakhaya. Yes, nasemadolobheni khona, kodwa emakhaya kudlulele kakhulu or kuwesi kakhulu. Uthini ngalabo bantu kanjalo nabogogo uqobo. Ogogo uyuza isikhathi esiningi ukuthi ugogo utholakala esehlala endleleni, obuyazi ukuthi endlini thola ukuthi kungena abafana bezombamba inkunzi bethatha imali yakhe for impesheni, baba adlwengule, lokhu nithi nge-English ku-ratio. Ngiphinde futhi ngithi uthini, ngoba ngiyajabula uphuma kakhulu kule ndawo lezinto ezi-base kakhulu khona, ngala bantu abanhlophe esigubo. Abantu abanhlophe esigubo ila bantu ebabizwa umthamalesibili, abantu abamhlophe. Njengoba uma uthi uyabheka, sikhule la bantu bekhona benyamalala besingazi kanti bayabulala, kuthiwa inhloba bayanyamalala, kodwa kuyimanje sekubonakele ukuthi bayafa, bayabulawa. Kodwa ekugcineni lawo macala awuwatholi ukuthi aphelelaphi. Kanjalo nezingane ey'tholakala ziyantshontshwa, ezinye igcine ehambe unomphela ngale sibonga uNkulunkulu ngalena etholakale yaseThekwini. Ma uthi uyalandela amaqala, ngicela ukubuza ukuthi uthini-ke ngalawo maxa, uzosiza ngani thina ma ukwenze kuqashwa manje, uzokwazi yini ukuya kula bantu basemakhaya lezi y'nkinga ezisihluphayo, uzosisiza ngani kuzona? Ngiyabonga.
The honorable member wants to know what's your take on the sexual abuses of women in the rural areas, albinism, what else?
More
sexual abuses of women, albinism, and rape cases of old women. especially those who are staying alone, and the abduction of of children.
I think she said something about LGBT. Yeah. She was talking about transgender issues, I think.
Yeah. All right. Let me address the first issue regarding rape and sexual abuse of elderly people. Any sexual abuse of anybody is an abomination. It's unacceptable. It's not part of a civilized norm, not part of any norm of any society. So my response to that would be the same as my response was recently in the media regarding a rape of a young girl at a university. I felt it's wrong. I believe in a consensual relationship, any relationship. Regarding LGBT, basically, again, one forgets the very fact that we have a constitution, a human rights culture in the constitution that speaks of equality, speaks of tolerance, and speaks of the very values that we aspire, this commission is aspiring, meaning equality. We have to understand this, that people's alternative lifestyles are their own domain, and we have to understand and live with it. And if you can't live with it, then we are making a mess of our constitutional values. And that is primarily the problem that I find in my practice as a commissioner in the CCMA. I find that this is quite often happening in the case of women, in the case of young incoming graduate students who happen to be female and who are being exploited because they don't know, no one educating them as to what their rights are.
Thanks, Herman. Can you interpret for the call?
I couldn't.
Oh, okay. I think we're done with the questions, ne? Oh, Nicola.
Thank you, Chair. Sir, you have focused a lot on your values and your belief in the culture and the importance of the Constitution, but also the importance of self-determination. You haven't really covered how you plan to add values to the CGE. What are you bringing that is specific that you can contribute? Specifically, because the face of poverty in this country is young black women, and also the large majority living in rural areas. Now, what do you believe the role of a commissioner is in reducing the inequality gap, and how do you plan to go about it? Thank you.
Well, let me start with let me tell you how to engage and plan. I think both are somehow simultaneously connected. I believe in a policy of constructive engagement. And this is what I have 37 years in my experience have been doing in litigation. I'm not a litigator, I am a conciliator, and I mediate in disputes. And that is why I moved into the labor dispute resolution, because to get a real insight as to what is, to get to the problem, one got to understand, empathize with the problem. And to come to the question that you posed about young black women who are the major victims of this abomination, I sincerely believe that one needs to eradicate that condition first. And that can be done through education. The value I bring in is with my experience as a lawyer, I can articulate both sides of the spectrum. In other words, the spectrum, the view of the victim, as well as the understand the society in which the victim is in, and then to deal the perpetrator or the violator of the constitutional rights and values in that context.
Mr. Magnoni.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sir, presently in South Africa, we are paying VAT on sanitary products. I want to know what's your view on this matter. And if you don't agree with it, what is it that you'll do to make sure that it gets addressed?
I believe that value-added tax on sanitary pads, on any woman's hygienic products, why leave it at sanitary pads? I believe that that should be eradicated entirely. I also believe, and this goes nothing to do with quality, I've been canvassing this at great length in Parliament, remove value-added tax on reading material, because they are both linked to human dignity, the rights, and therefore sanitary pads alone won't cure the problem. I believe that you should expand it to every woman's product regarding her physical hygiene, and I would like to address that by making submissions to Parliament using the international conventions, particularly the UN Convention of the Rights of Women and the Rights of Minorities, particularly regarding this issue. Access to health care facilities is fundamental to our values, and we shouldn't by any chance allow ourselves to limit what we're supposed to be doing just to just one aspect of sanitary pads. So therefore, I believe we should expand that to all hygienic products.
Yeah, there's still time. My story.
Mr. Jeff, are you familiar with the reviewal of card ASMAS of the Chapter 9? I don't know whether you are, but I wanted to ask you on the recommendation that the last one is that we reject the suggestion that parliamentary portfolio committees appoint the chairperson of the committee. It holds a danger of restricting its independence in dealing with committee. Is that the fact? And the other one is that in the event that a separate budget for Chapter 9 is not feasible, having it in fall under Parliament budget holds a danger for independence. What do you think about it? And just to round up everything, how are you able to work with other commissioners if you would be appointed? What would the relationship, what do you expect, and how do you know it to be to work with other people?
Let me address the last question first. I, as a practicing commissioner of the CCMA, as well as a lawyer and a litigator, I believe in the principle of collegiality. In other words, I believe that working with other commissioners must be for the benefit of what we are here for, and that is by sharing knowledge and experiences, by debating, articulating situations. Regarding independence of the committee, funding, etc., like the judiciary, I believe independence is a question of practice as a choice, and to do our work within the constitutional framework without fear or favor. So as far as the portfolio committee is concerned, I don't have a view on that, I'll be honest with you, but I'm homing in on the fact that you mentioned independence. I am a votary for independence independence of the commission, irrespective of who funds. It is the government, for example, funding the judiciary, yet the judiciary is playing a fundamental role in directing our constitutional law, and without fear or favor. And we have a robust judiciary. Why can't we have a robust commission for gender equality?
Okay. Are you done, Honorable Maluleka?
Chairperson, thank you very much. This is a short question. Sir, in South Africa, we usually
have this 16 days of activism against women and children abuse. Do you believe that we should just have that 16 days? And if so, why? And if not, what are you going to do to make sure that maybe we do have it throughout the calendar year?
I've been involved with advice desk for the abuse in Durban. And I've been involved in gender-based violence ever since I remember practicing law. I don't believe 16 days of activism is enough. I believe we should be a 365 and a quarter day endeavor. And I believe in sort of an in-your-face kind of exposure to the media. That's not done. Because two things happening. If you look at the media today, it's male-dominated. And it is not sufficiently enough representative of feminine views. Particularly, there should be a page in every newspaper once a week exposing some of the foibles of our society, the violence that's taking place, the rape that our learned committee member mentioned about. It's not been done. Yet, when a low-income, mentioned KwaZulu-Natal, there was this, I use the word, organized hijacking taking place where a child was hijacked in a car. It transpired that that was not the case. But however, the media just splashed all over. The Sunday newspapers in KwaZulu-Natal were all over this issue. But they never mentioned. They never mentioned the reality in the ground regarding, on the same province of KwaZulu-Natal, we have high rate of illiteracy, high rate of abuse of women. Nothing took place, even in the 16 days of activism that was mentioned. So I believe, and if I'm so chosen the commissioner, then my role will be one of making sure that these things are brought to the public limelight, to gentle education, not the sledgehammer approach, but to gentle education, exposing the very values that we stand for.
Okay, we are done with the questions from honorable members. Thank you, Mr. Jess, for honoring our invitation. Is there anything that you want to ask regarding this address?
When do I start? No, seriously, I thank everybody. I'm very eager to fulfill my role in this constitutional democracy. I believe that if I'm taken up on my word, that I would dedicate my career by standing down on my other professions, my professional qualifications. And that is what I'm here for. And, I'm committed to ensure that we have a smooth, I use the word smooth, evolution of values in our society. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Have a safe trip. Thank you.
And thank you very much, and I must wish you well for your deliberations.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
How's the morning?
Me a bit of a one getting in with the
yeah, at least we're informed that you are stuck in the traffic.
Yes, sir, but I'm in Canada.
Are you from Cape Town?
No, I'm from Durban, but
oh,
I'm
your
in
mic
Canada.
Is not on, eh?
Oh.
Please turn your mic. There we go. I'm from Durban, but I was here last week on business, so I just stayed for the weekend. So, and so I came in with the traffic this morning. You are used to this traffic of Cape Town, eh? You can relax.
You.
If you need water, I think there's a bottle of water there.
There is. Thank you very much.
Nobody's going to crucify you. It's just an interview. Honorable members, all of them, I'm sure, they're going to ask questions.
Yes.
You've got 25 minutes to respond to our questions.
Yes.
But I think the question is, tell us about yourself.
Yeah.
And why do you think you're a suitable candidate for this position?
Indeed. My name is Susan Abra. I'm an attorney from Durban. I've been an attorney since 1990, which is longer than I'd like to admit to. I specialise in family law, which is
involved with, I have been involved with women's rights within my practice for many, many years. I have been involved with women's organizations, including the Advice Desk for the Abused. I have been a member and chairperson of the Law Society of South Africa Gender Committee, as well as I'm still the chairperson of the Family Law Committee. So basically my practice is aligned to women's rights. Whether I'm acting for the man or the woman, I make sure that women are taken care of. I'm very passionate, and I think I can add value in terms of my experience and the fact that I am able to stand up and make myself heard. No problem.
Let me allow honorable members to introduce themselves first.
Thank you.
Yeah, the first one we are done. My name is
Nhlanhlanhla Ncubendaba. I'm the chairperson of this ad hoc committee.
Yes.
Can honorable members introduce themselves? On my left hand side, I have my committee secretary, Neliswa, and Tembega, my timekeeper for today.
My name is Dori Murugwa. I'm a member of this committee.
Good morning. My name is Thabo Manyoni. I'm the member of the committee.
Morning. I'm Joyce Maluleke, member of this committee.
Morning.
Morning, Susan. My name is Nokule Majeke, member of this committee.
Good morning.
Sanibona, igama lami nguSibongile Makoti Khawula.
Sanibona.
Omunye waleli komiti, ngiyabonga.
Makoti kero.
Morning, my name is Pinky Kikana, member of the committee.
Morning.
Good morning, Terry Stander, member of the committee.
Good morning.
Good morning, Ms. Abril. My name is Nomsa Machizi, I'm a member of the committee.
Good morning.
Bumania Druhan, member of parliament and member of this committee. The interpreter that's voicing for me is Francois Dijssel. Thank you.
Good morning.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm sorry. Honorable Nomsa, Honorable Majeke, Kekane and Makaula, and Honorable Mayon.
Yes, good morning, Ms. Susan.
Morning.
I'm here.
Yes.
I can see that you've got experience in family law, and I wanted to ask you in terms of the responsibility of the CGE when you come to Section 11. You know that in order to achieve the object referred to, the CGE shall monitor and evaluate policies and practices of the organs of state.
Yes.
What do you think about, have we done justice on the equality legislation that we passed in 2000, the equality law that some people call it PEPUDA? How far do you think we have gone with this legislation? Have we done justice to it? And secondly, how do you view the issue of inequality towards the LGBTIs in this instance? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, I think as far as the legislation is concerned, I think we've got fantastic legislation. It's the making sure that it's properly enforced is the word I'm looking for. So I'm just battling with the question. I think that as far as
no, it's fine. Mum's story can repeat her question.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's my question is, now that you are privy to the law, the act, this on section 11, it specifies what the CPE should be doing. Yes. Now I am saying, as a person of law, how do you view the PEPUDA that we passed in 2000, the equality legislation? Do you think we've done enough? Do you think, does it show any results? And have we monitored this properly? What do you think about it? That's what I'm asking. And I'm also asking about
LGBTI. I think LGBTI, if I can come to the second part of your question, is a very obviously topical and important issue, and I think that's a whole new situation. We've always been focused on gender, specifically per se woman. Now we've got to look at the other issues involving people with different people who are different. So I think LGBTI in respect of females obviously falls within the ambit of the Gender Commission and has to be monitored and supported as such. Insofar as the legislation is concerned, I think there's been an amazing job done by the Gender Committee in terms of the monitoring and the overview. And I think, unfortunately, there are still issues that need to be addressed in terms of not specifically gender legislation, but the application and enforcement of the gender legislation and within so many different aspects of society. So that's, I think, where the issues lie.
Thank you, Chair. Ms. Ambro, yes. I just want to find out, according to Judge Pillay, he refers you as a candidate that can make a powerful contribution to the work of the CGE.
Yes.
Bring along a network of stakeholders in gender equality and transformation. In your view, how would you leverage such potential to practically empower the women of this country? And also, another question that I would like to ask you, given the fact that you come from family law and litigation, you know that we have a problem of maintenance defaulters in the country, and we are really battling with that. And I just want to find out if, within the CGE, what type of impetus can you bring in should you be a commissioner? Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I've always used my connections to the various stakeholders in any event to assist women, so it's something that I think is very important. I obviously am involved with business and I'm involved with NGOs and that kind of situation. So there's always a link, to be made, and you know, the CGE operates within the non-governmental as well as the governmental sphere in terms of the monitoring and the overview site. So I think that I could bring a lot to of benefit, as Judge Pillay says, because of the fact that I move within the different spheres as well. I have connections to business associations, I have connections to NGOs and charitable institutions, as well as having acted as a judge, etc. So, you know, I have connections from all of those areas, and I bring them with me, is the short answer. As far as maintenance is concerned, I have just presented a paper at a conference on that issue specifically. I think, and that is one of the issues I would like to focus on if I should become part of the Gender Commission, because I think it's one of the most important things. I think the people who are affected are usually women and children, and they are the poorest people and they get the least assistance. So I think that we need to turn the whole system on its head. I think there needs to be a formula for the amount of maintenance that needs to be paid. I think the onus for claiming the maintenance and not claiming the maintenance. I think the onus for proving that you can't afford the maintenance should move from the person who's claiming it to the person who's paying it. And I think it should be an automatic deduction from any form of income. I don't think we should have to wait until they default before we actually are able to get a garnishee order or some such thing. So I think there's a lot of scope for changes in the law to benefit the poorest of the poor.
Okay. Who's next?
Yes. Thank you, Chair. Ma'am, you have just said to us that you have linkages and connections with business people or business associations and NGOs. And part of the CGE is to educate, lobby, and advise and report on issues of gender equality. Do you think CGE has done enough to lobby the private sector to factor in women empowerment programs top on their agenda, and that it should not be malicious compliance by private sector to say at least this and that for women, but it should be something that is a priority in the private sector given the inequality gap that is widening? What is it that you think you'll do to use that strength of your connections to make sure that even the private sector comes to the party for women empowerment issues?
Well, I think the private sector is particularly important because women in business is a big issue. And women in business, women get to a certain ceiling and then there's nowhere to go. So I think, again, as you said, we need to have some form of... I'm not saying that the Commission has done a bad job. It's just that the private sector has done a bad job in implementing. That's the problem. So what we need to do is, so for example, I'm a member of the Durban Chamber of Commerce and Industry. We should maybe work through those structures and get them to hold training exercises for private enterprises. And again, there is the requirement for gender equality. It's a case of making sure that you sit on them about enforcing it, because you find at the top levels they have women who they use, generally speaking, for a lot of the companies. So you're not getting it across the board for women, you're just getting a few women. Middle management, it's very difficult. That's the problematic part. And then also to lift up from the lower management, as you say, you need training and empowerment. So that's where we need to link, for example, with Business Women's Organization. They do a census every year, which shows exactly where the level of gender equity is in private, in government. And then you can work from that census and follow up on it. Because, you know, people are required to report. People are required to may have plans. It's the following up and the enforcement, and we've got to get strict with people. They must do the enforcement themselves. They must do the implementation themselves.
Thank you, Chair. My question is, let's say you are appointed as a commissioner. How would you plan to lead the commission ethically for sustainability in terms of the economy, addressing the imbalances of the past for gender equality for women and children?
There's a couple of areas that I personally would focus on. The first one would be obviously from the legal point of view, which is probably I would want to look at the judges and transformation of the judiciary, because there hasn't been enough gender transformation in the judiciary. And from that point of view, we need to actually target women who we think are appropriate, and then we need to assist them in terms of training and education so that they can become judges. It's not fair to simply appoint someone who hasn't been assisted, because then they start off on the back foot. As I said, the maintenance issue is very close to my heart, and domestic violence as well is very close to my heart. They are issues that are, and it's not just in South Africa, it's all over the world, that these are issues that are out of control, and we need to find a way to get more assistance for women in those respects, because it's not just enforcing the protection order, it's also when the woman is removed from the home, where does she go? There are shelters, but there aren't enough shelters. So you need cooperation between the Department of Social Development, you need cooperation with the Department of Health, you need cooperation with the Department of Education. So it's getting all of those departments on the same page working together, because we all tend to blame the police, and sometimes the blame is fair, but other times they do their job, but then what do you do? So those are issues that are very important to me. In terms of poverty alleviation, that's an issue that, well, the rural areas is very important. We have to go in there. We have to assist with training. And I've been involved with an organization called the Weak Trust, which goes into the townships and identifies women who are running little businesses themselves, and then it trains them, it gives them bursaries, and then helps them to grow their businesses. And that's what you're looking for. You're looking to empower entrepreneurs so that they can employ more people. And women are very good at being entrepreneurs. So I would say those are the issues that really are the closest to my heart.
Thank you, Chairperson. Ms. Susan, we see that you've been a chairperson of a subcommittee on family law since the year 2007 to date. What, in your opinion, stands out in terms of that position that you have done that makes you feel that you really are a gender activist? And two, what's your view on paying VAT on sanitary products, hygienic products for women? And what is it that you'll do, if you have a view, that you think should basically address that view as quick as possible? Thanks.
What we have done in the Family Law Committee, we have been involved with a number of projects. One is with the South African Police Services and domestic violence. We had a project which we addressed across the country. Another is we've been involved with compulsory mediation for that had projects in some of the magistrates' courts, and I think they're probably going to roll it out to all of the courts. So before you can actually proceed with anything, you have to go for mediation, which is a much better, more friendly way of trying to resolve issues. I'm not so sure it can work with domestic violence, but it can certainly work with most other issues. The part about the sanitary hygienic items, I'm not sure I understood the question. Can you just repeat it?
All right, thank you, Chair. Presently in South Africa, we are paying VAT on sanitary products. What's your view on this? Should it be changed or not? And if you think this issue should basically be addressed and changed, what is it that you'll do as a commissioner to address it?
Well, the issue of young girls and obtaining sanitary products is a big problem, because most of them don't manage to afford it, and therefore they miss a week of school every month, which is obviously unacceptable and needs to be addressed. I know that there are a number of businesswomen's organizations who are addressing it by collecting the products and distributing them in their areas. So that's one way of doing it. And I think that's a public-private partnership that could work, you know, if we took it to the higher levels. I mean, at the moment, it's just the KZN people doing it. But if you took it to the higher levels and took it nationally, that's a project that could work between the commission and private enterprise. So I think it's very important, of the utmost importance.
Makaula and Nicole. Kosazana Susan laphonga phambili sibonga ukuthi ukhona. Awambuza ukuthi qhaphu nje. Ngiyezwa ukuthi cha uthi usebenzile kulomnyango
as long as one dollar 3 minutes.
Okay. I won't.
Sorry, is there a translator?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will forget that then. Nansi inkinga ekhona yomhlaba. Abantu besifazane bashonelwa amadoda emakhaya, bathola ukuthi bagcina sebehlukumezeka ngenxa yokuthi abantu besifazane bakakabi nazwi ngokomhlaba. Bese befudukela emadolobheni, sebezofuna amatohuzi baphilise iy'ngane zabo. Thola ukuthi lapho kunjalo bayasha nemikhukhu njengako Kenville uyazi wensuku eThekwini. Abantu besifazane labaya ngenxa yokuthi abanayo ilento umuntu ababhekelele ukuthi bayakwazi ukuthola imhlaba, bayakwazi ukuthola umnotho njengezimayini. And imost yonke labantu babafelokazi abaphethe izintandane. Ngifuna ukubuza-ke kuwena ukuthi yini osithembisa yona ukuthi kulamaplazi akhona, ufuna ngisho, angikhulumi ngemhlaba le enabanikazi bawo. Uzokwazi ukusilwela ukuthi laba bantu bagcine nabo sebehlala endaweni ezobapha isithunzi bavikeleke lokhu kusha daily ney'ngane zabo. Kenville ufakazi daily qiqo lapha nalana eCape Town ubonile nanemkhukhu. Abantu besifazane isithunzi saba kakahlonipheki. Yamathoyilethi abahlala kuwona, amanzi abanawo, uma uthi ubheka indlu abalala kuyona ngeke usho ukuthi umuntu wesifazane uthothe ulele ney'ngane. Ngicela ukwazi nje obulana, ngabe uze ngenxa yokuthi uzwe kuthiwa nayi post noma uze ngokuzimisela ukuthi ufuna ukuzolekelela kwabantu besifazane baphume kule ngcindezi ababhekene nazo, ngabe komhlaba ngokomnotho? Ngiyabonga.
Thanks, Chair. My caller wants to know from the candidate that what he is going to do on the issue of the land question for widowed women, who in particular those who migrate to urban areas, and what is it that you are going to do to protect the dignity of women, to promote economic empowerment of them. She also described the situation in which they are living in, which particular must be aware of, and can you explain what is it that you are going to do, in particular the promotion of dignity of women? That's it.
Okay. That's a very big question. Well, I don't think...
You can continue.
Thank you. I don't really think that the Gender Commission has the power to distribute land to people. So I think that that situation arises when there are different situations. It's the government, basically, and it relates to the...
I think you didn't get her question well.
Yes.
Maybe Herman must repeat what Makaula was saying. so that you can get the question well, so that you cannot say, she said, you must give women land. Because if, in my understanding, she was talking in terms of you assisting women in accessing land.
Oh, indeed.
Well,
that would obviously be through the Department of Human Settlements, where they're the ones who distribute the housing, and through the Land Claims Court. I'm not aware if the Commission is able to access those institutions, but it's certainly not something that's without the consideration the Commission has to monitor public as well as private. So obviously a monitoring role is important in that regard. To protect the dignity of women, one has to keep following the processes in terms of courts, in terms of the government, and in terms of however one is able to access private enterprise. I mean, there's been a lot about it in the media, and there's been a lot about it in terms of, I'm really not getting the question. I'm not understanding the question.
Do you need assistance?
Protect women's rights of dignity in respect of economic empowerment. I think I've already dealt with that in terms of assisting women with enterprises. Sorry? I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Kaula.
The point is that you have to assist women to empower them economically. And the only way you can do that is by training, by education, and financially. Those are the only ways you can assist women and protect their dignity. And you've got to identify women, like I said, in the townships who are actually conducting small businesses in the rural areas, and then take them forward in whatever way they might turn interest. But education is the key. There's no question about that. And you can access the training and the finances once you've got education. And there are different ways of doing education. It doesn't mean you have to go to school or university. There's training by NGOs. There's training, practical training that you can go and undertake. Durban Chamber of Commerce Women in Business section has a training section for women from the rural areas to assist them to develop in their economic practices. So in my opinion, that's the way you empower women. You help them to become more self-sufficient by establishing their own businesses or becoming employed.
Thank you. Two questions. It's mainly young black women in the rural areas who are the most oppressed. What is your opinion in terms of the conflicting values between culture and the Constitution? And how would you try and get them to merge? What is your plan in that respect? So if I condense that first question, what are the issues and how do you plan to integrate culture versus the constitutional values? My second question is that many Chapter 9 institutions, departments, etc., have very limited resources and always complain of a limited budget. So in terms of your plan, now you've highlighted women in the economy and many township focuses your passion with domestic violence. But there are a number of issues that face women in this country, how would you prioritize those limited resources and limit budget? Where would your first point of call be? Thank you.
Thank you. The first question is a very vexing question, and I think it occupies us all a great deal of the time, because we all have different cultures or religions or beliefs, and we are bound by those from a moral point of view. And then you have the democratic values and the constitution, which are enforceable in terms of the law. So it's a very difficult situation to get the compromise between the two, and sometimes one has to prevail over the other. And when it comes to women's rights, excuse me, I think democratic values have to prevail. However, one always has to try and negotiate a compromise between the two. When you're looking at issues like the traditional courts law, there's a great concern about, excuse me, the protection of women in terms of that law, because women don't have rights in the traditional courts. So if we are not going to fight against it in the NGO sector, then we need to find a way to compromise and get the woman to be protected in those situations. I think we have to show respect for people's cultures. There's no doubt that we are all morally guided by those. So, but when it comes to women's rights or culture, I think women's rights triumph. As to the question of resources, I think your top issues have to be economic empowerment, and I would go straight for the domestic violence issue after that, because we've got to get that under control, and it really is an extreme problem. So even if it's just monitoring the enforcement of the domestic violence situation by conducting research in the different courts, and that you can do by having the courts actually provide the information to you. But those to me are the most important.
Thank you, Chair. Ms. Ambro, the Commission for Gender Equality presented a proposal, which was a campaign called One Woman, One Hectare of Land. The campaign aims to mainstream gender equality, for it was proposed that the state should allocate 1 hectare of land for the growing of food to poorest rural females run households. So I just want to find out, are you aware of this?
No.
And also, what is your view? Okay, if you're not aware, I would like to know what is your view on that.
I think it's a brilliant idea, because especially in the rural areas, if women are empowered by owning their own land, that's a starting point for them to become more economically empowered, because you grow and then you use what you need and then you sell what you don't need, and that's how business starts. So I think it's a brilliant idea. Unfortunately, I haven't heard about it, but I think it's something that certainly is quite capable of being applied, because there's plenty of land available, and I think it's a brilliant idea.
I just want to know, because of your experience that you have told us about in specifically in family law background. Are you able to work with people from different cultures, different backgrounds? And just tell us about yourself. How do you feel working with people?
I have
Are you an independent person? Or?
Well, I have my own practice, so I'm completely independent. I work with people from all cultures in my practice, from all economic backgrounds, from all religious backgrounds, and from all cultural backgrounds. So I have absolutely no problem with that. In fact, I'm quite good with people. So I don't see anything like that as an issue.
Okay, thank you very much, Honourable Members and Susan. Thank you for honouring our invitation. Do you have anything to ask us? Do you have any questions to ask?
No, I don't have any questions. I just want to reiterate that I wouldn't be putting myself forward and going through this if I wasn't really, if I didn't think I could make a contribution, because that's where my passion lies. So please consider that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Have a safe trip, ne? Ms. Alina Tandiwe Mfulo. You must relax. Take a deep breath. Just mind, because all of us here, most of us are women in this panel, and feel free. Yeah, just be comfortable. Nobody is going to crucify you here. Yeah, honorable members are just going to ask questions. You have 25 minutes to respond to the question. If you didn't hear well the question, you have the right to say, may the member repeat the question, so that at least you can respond appropriately. My name is Nonhlanhlang Mubendaba. I'm the chairperson of this ad hoc committee. On my left-hand side, I have the committee secretary, Neliswa Nobatana. And on my right-hand side, I have my timekeeper, Tembeka. And we have our legal person, Herman, there at the back. And we have Yoliswa there, our media person. And our other staff member, Crystal, is on at the back. And the human resource lady next to you. And other media houses in the morning, they were here. I think they are still here. Yeah, can honorable members introduce themselves?
Good morning. My name is Dori Murudwa, a member of this committee.
Morning, ma'am. Follow. My name is Thabo Manyoni. I'm the member of the committee.
Good morning, ma. My name is Pinky Kika, a member of this committee.
Terry Sander, member of the committee. Malam Fulo, Ikamalam Gunam Samachesi, the Ilungulal committee.
Good morning, Wilmania Druchen, member of the committee. Voicing for me is my sign language interpreter, Trudy Tienes. Good day.
Yeah, thank you very much, honorable members. It's good that you understand even sign language. So
I'm impressed. Tandiwe, you can tell us about yourself and why do you think you're a suitable candidate for this position?
Thank you very much. Good morning, members, honorable members, and good morning, everybody. My name is Tandiwe Alina Mfulo. I'm a woman with disabilities, mother of two, an activist on gender and an activist on issues of disability. And I don't have matric, but I'm a well-learned, self-developed woman. I can speak more than 7 languages, including some language. The reason for that, I had to learn some of the languages. When you work in community, you're forced. I couldn't speak Afrikaans, I could write Afrikaans, but now I can speak it fluently based on how you work in the community. I'm a member of NEMISA, a board member. I've just started now, it's not long, but I've been serving on different structures. I'm a member of NEDEC as a principal member representing disability sector in the NEDEC. I was a board member for Northern Cape Development Trust. You know, those years to become a board member, you're not paid. I've become surprised now that you get paid. But we were dealing also with community, women, everybody. When it comes to issues of women, when it comes to gender issues, when it comes to youth, because you work with all across, it affects you. But also, I was a member of parliament until 2014, and I was on the appropriation and committee, and I was also serving on monitoring and evaluation committee, also on the Auditor General's committee. The Auditor General now, I was sitting in the panel when he was hired to become an Auditor General. So I'm also doing community work. I used to be the South African Women Entrepreneur Network, where we develop women in terms of businesses, how they start the business. You remember, most of the time women didn't register their businesses. So I was a chairperson of the province in Northern Cape to make sure that women in Northern Cape, and I'm proud because there's a lot of women in my province that have excelled in their businesses. I was also serving as a South African soccer legend as a coordinator, but that one, I didn't even nominate it. What happened, I found them struggling because they wanted to have a clinic program in the province, and they didn't have funding. So I met one guy, he said they were struggling, so I just went and assisted them in funding, and I got interested in that, into the soccer legends. That's how I joined it. I'm serving on the Presidential Working Committee on Disability now, advising the president of the country how to deal with issues of disability. So basically what I'm doing is to make sure that we make the rights real. We've got rights in South Africa, we've got policies in South Africa, but how do we make them real? How do we plan? One of the things that I think it's lacking is how, after we protest, when I look at the vision of the Commission on Gender Equality, it's talking about protections, you know, development, but it's not talking about how we make sure that those rights become real to an ordinary person in the community. And how do you interact that with culture? Because you remember when I grew up, I've got two children. So when my firstborn became a woman, my mom says, you know what? It's cultural, it's psychological. She says, you don't go near a boy. Otherwise, you'll be worse than what is happening. And my child believed in it. And now she's married, she's got a house, she did not abuse alcohol. So I looked at it and say, culturally, how do we implement issues of gender equality? Because in the olden days, you'll be told if you are a man, if you abuse a woman, it means when it comes to bed, you are not good. So every man did not abuse women. So how do we make sure that those things that we are talking about in 20 years become reality? So basically, that's what I'm doing. I've got a program in the township of Cleary. I started it last year. But after we clean, we sit down and talk about day-to-day issues that affects us as women, that affects us as youth,
that affects us as people with disability and that affects us as men. And we talk, and by doing that, for me, it's making the right real, because now we are on the ground, you are able to implement and explain what needs to happen when it comes to Commission on Gender Equality or Equality of Women or how women benefited, and we talk about that. Thank you. I'll stop there for now.
Okay, thank you, Alina. Mam Story, Velma, Honorable Velma, Honorable Nomsa, Honorable Kekane, Honorable Maluleke, Majeke, and Kaula. Kaula, Honorable Kaula, your interpreters are here now, so I no longer gonna trouble him. Thank you very much for coming. You're welcome.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson, for allowing me to speak. Madam Alina Tandiwe Mfulo, good afternoon, good morning. Happy to meet you after such a long time. Yes, I see on your leadership position held that you are a member of NEMISA. Can you tell us in NEMISA what program, now that you are telling us that you are very passionate about gender equality, what programs do you have in NEMISA in developing women? And the other thing, I wanted to know whether you are aware that we are talking these days about many, many, let me say, several NGOs are speaking aloud about sex workers, decriminalization of sex workers. What do you think about that? Because there are many views. There are those who are saying decriminalize, the others are saying criminalize the buyer. Now, CGE, I know it is standing for decriminalization. Are we on the right track as CGE?
Thank you so much. In terms of NEMISA, when I got into NEMISA last year, I became the chairperson for a program that is educating. We are saying we need to educate the nation. And when I got in, I realized that the training that was given, we partnered with SABC to train youth in terms of filming and everything. But I suggested that when we talk about the economy, or when you talk about community, that needs to be computer literate, because now the world is changing, it's going digital. Now, if we're going digital, what kind of program do we have? Then we partnered with the University of Limpopo. We've partnered with different universities. In Limpopo, we've got a program that calls She Needs to Connect, which is Intel. And then we are piloting it in Limpopo. But what is happening there, it's all women that are coming to that training about anything, but we use the IT. We train them, how do you put on a computer, all these kind of things. But we talk about general things that women need, you know, in terms of their environment. So as we are piloting it, we are also spreading it to other universities. And we are also saying the criteria that the university is using. I don't want to be an IT guru, but I want to be literate in terms of IT. If I take my cell phone, I want to be able to bank. If I want to be able to connect with my family. But how do I do that if not most of us are literate around it? So basically that's what we are doing. We are saying we want to train more women, especially in rural areas, so that they don't have to travel to cities to come and do their, they can sit at home and still do their work. So that's what we are doing. In terms of decriminalization, For me, it's neither there or here. Because whether you criminalize it, it will happen. You decriminalize it, it still happens. So it's better if it doesn't become a criminal thing. It is better if then we will know, because at this moment, because it's criminal, it's happening in corners. You know, people are being exploited in these brothels. Now, if it's open, I don't think a lot of things that are happening towards sex workers will be happening in terms of exploitation, in terms of some of them are being put into the position not because they want to. It's the situation that they are around. So if we decriminalize it, it's easier also for people to come forward and say, this is what I'm doing. Then we can have a measurement of making sure that in terms of pregnancy, there's no straight back abortion. There's no, we can talk about HIV and AIDS freely. We can educate and say, use condoms. At this moment, it's here and there. You don't really see. And it becomes a challenge if you deal with something that you don't see or you don't know. Because when you come to the person, because the person believes that if I'm talking freely, I'll go to jail. So they don't trust anyone at this moment. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Velma.
Thank you, Jefferson. Hi. Thank you for being here. I know that you are very active in various disability fields and in the disability sector, including Disabled People South Africa, DPSA. I would like to know from you, if you are selected to serve, before that, I would like you to give us your perspective on the CGE. Are they doing enough for the girl child with a disability and women with disabilities? Do they do enough? Can more be done? And if you are selected to sit on the CGE, what do you think we can do to assist, you can do to assist the Commission to do more for women with disabilities and the girl child with disabilities and create more awareness about the girl child or the woman with disabilities and the abuse that they have to endure? How will you do that? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. What, in terms of CGE, about children and women with disabilities, I found them lacking. But how are they lacking? They are not visible enough. But also, it's among us sitting here. You are not disabled. How do you make sure that a person who's not disabled understands another person who is disabled? One of them is our role as women with disability to educate, or to share, or partner. But also from the CGE point of view, hence I was saying, the rights are not real, we have to make them real. One of them is to say, when we've got activities at CGE, we must make sure that we include women with disability. If it's about children with disability, including their parents, remember in disability we've got different categories. There are those who are represented by their parents based on their disability. But how do you teach your parents to say you don't take over? You speak like your child. And at this moment in my community, I've approached two schools to say I'm going to put three disabled children in your school, and we are going to study it from there. So that the whole staff can understand to say what is really needed at this moment. And I think at CGE, that's what we need to do. When we go around and say we are checking whether women are there, we need also to say how many women are there and in which position. Because imagine women are there, yes. But let us be realistic and check how many women with disabilities are there. It's not even a percentage. So we need to push SCTE to say, when we talk about women, we also talk about women with disability. It must be in people's minds. Because if you tend to forget it as a leader, do you think people are following will remember? No, they won't. So we need to make sure that it's happening.
children, the same. If we say children, we need to say, yes, children are going to school. But how many children are with disability in that are going to school? And if it's a challenge, what is the challenge? How do we deal with this challenge? And also work together with communities, whether it's a city or whether it's a single parent, who deals with that child, or a disabled woman who deals with disability, or who knows what's happening about. Let us rope them in and bring them here. You know, one of the things when I was working for Transnet, I said to my boss, can you adopt a family? We started the program of adopting a family. And I said to him, adopting a family is to understand that your cleaner, how does your cleaner stay at home? Does he stay in shack? And is the shack leaking? And if it's leaking as a boss, what are you going to do? It's the same thing here, where we adopt each other. I don't have a disability, but maybe I need a friend with disability so that I can understand a little bit better what is happening. And then in that way, you are here. Because once you are in the environment, you know what to do. But once you talk from outside, it becomes a challenge. So we need to be inclusive. And I'll challenge you as Member of Parliament and as a commissioner from CGE to adopt a friend with disability, whether it's a child or an older person, a guy. Adopt and start to work on the own thing. I remember when I started, I couldn't speak some language. But because I was recruiting people who hearing impairment and who could not speak, I was forced to learn sign language. And now I'm proud because I can interact with everybody. But if I didn't take that initiative, I'll be seeing one thing. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I think Honorable Nomsa and Kegane.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, ma'am. I just want to find out, you know, you've been a Member of Parliament from, I think, must have been in the 4th Parliament.
Yes, from 2012.
Yes. I just want to find out, you know, you seem to be very vocal when it comes to issues of disabled people, but yet we're sitting with a... we are unable to actually to achieve the 2% representation of disabled people. So I want to challenge you. I just want to ask you, what is it that you've done? Because we are still failing on that. And now you want to be part of CGE. So what is it that you didn't achieve? Because of course I would say that you didn't achieve that in Parliament. So how are you going to be able to achieve it within CGE? Because CGE is responsible for representation as well, you know, to influence the representation of disabled people nationally. Thank you.
Thank you so much. One of the things that I did and I'm still doing is to, in Parliament, we did not. I remember we had a committee on people with disabilities, and it's one of the things that we challenged. The Parliament itself is not also, especially when it comes to employment. At least when it comes to Member of Parliament, it's fine. But when it comes to staff itself, it's not there. And we raised it with the previous chief whip to say, this is not here. Including accessibility and everything. People may think that Parliament is accessible. You know, for me now to go to the toilet, I traveled. I know there are some areas where there's an accessible toilet, but others, no. Like the toilet that I went to now, no. It took me a little bit longer to come here. You had to wait for me. So when it came now, just imagine now, accessibility, let's talk to employment. The Parliament is not practicing what it says. They practice it in paper, but when it comes to reality, it's not there. Why? And we've talked about it, and I'm still talking about it. And I'm giving you a challenge as Parliament to make sure that people with disability, in terms of employment, we are going to challenge. FCGE, if I become a commissioner, it's one of the things that I'll do. I'll really go, because sometimes you challenge issues and they look at you and say, they call us, yeah, super. You know, it's people. So you fight a battle that you know it will take time. Hence I'm saying, if we are able to adopt or we are able to be learn from other people, especially people with disabilities, it's going to be easy. So I'm still monitoring. In other companies, I go to companies and challenge CEOs of those companies and say, I don't see you preaching. At this moment, we are working close with Transnet. It's taking people with disability. In Netherlands, they took 40 already, one. Although they are not on higher position, but this is a step in the right direction. One of the things that I did, I drafted a policy on disability in the workplace for Transnet. I made sure it's happening as a shop steward, because I was a full-time shop steward of Transnet, but also as an individual to make sure that issues. But it's one step at a time, because remember where we come from, it's a belief, it's a culture, it's a myth. Everybody thinks whatever they want to think. So before you can even say hire a person, you need to educate the person who is going to hire. Then in that way you are going to move. But if you just say take, I make an example with the 40 that are taken in Transnet. The staff of Transnet wrote a memorandum and say disability, it's too much. I had to get in. I was not working for Transnet, but I had to get in and educate the staff to say, imagine you get hired and someone says he doesn't want you. But I also have to educate management, including people with disability. Because sometimes they are also noting, they'll use their disabilities, they don't want to work, and say, I cannot do that. And sometimes it's not the truth. So it's a two-way communication where you need to teach both parties. And as disabled people in South Africa, it's one of the things that we do. Each and every member is an activist, not only on disability. You end up being an activist on women issues and men on youth, because it's a cut across thing. It's not single based on disability. It's cut across other people. So you need to educate both sides. You need to raise awareness to both sides. You need to share. You need to make it reality to both sides. So basically that's how I do it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Mealina, you said on your CV that your strength is also on negotiating and influencing, but you also indicated to us that you have assisted women in the Northern Cape to excel in business. Now, given an enabling environment that has been created by our government, to create entrepreneurs, can we proudly say that women too are moving up the ladder? Today we are talking of top 10 billionaires, and I think in that list it's predominantly male,
yes,
and white. Do you think at the pace we are moving, we'll soon have South African women in that category, including women with disability? Or should the CGE lobby more for women empowerment? Or do you think they are doing less in that category, making sure that women move up the ladder?
Thank you so much. As women in business, we are not yet there. Based on different reasons, based on race, based on culture, based on background, based on knowledge. And there's a lot that is influencing that we are not reaching it. But what I think needs to happen, the last time we said 30% for women in terms of economic development. But what is 30%? Is it there? That's 30% and where? Because I'll make an example. People will say, I've got so many women that I gave business. But when you look at in terms of profit and everything, that woman is a survivor. Is that 30%? We need to be saying 30% in, if it says profit, I become a billionaire or a millionaire in that. If we say Now, I became a survivalist, but I'm ticking the box. The problem is we tick the box. We don't do actual. If we can go to actual and say, among these billionaires, there are 10 male. What is it that we can get at least 5 billionaires on top of these 10? What plans are we having? We've got policies, we've got programs, we've got everything in South Africa. The only thing is, how do we make that happen? How do we make that right real? That's where it's lacking. You know, I'll make an example. As a businesswoman, I do construction. When I go to the tender site, it's already written, if you're not on site, it means you're not. But when I get to the site that I'm going to, I cannot even access that site based on different reasons. If it's a building, they say, come and clean this building. I cannot even climb those stairs to go and check what is actually happening inside. So I depend on people as a business person. So already there's a barrier for me. Do you think I'll grow? No, I won't. Language. Women in rural areas. And what is business? It's a barrier because the tender document comes in English and in that language of business. That doesn't make it simple for me as a woman who cannot speak English to be able to feel that form, even if I can read and write in my language. So I think FCGE, we need to make things real. Because already we've got rights. We need to come up with a plan that makes those things real. If one company says, yes, I've given women 30% of my whatever, like now government is stepping that this big business in construction, they must make sure that 30% goes to the previously disadvantaged. How? We are saying it, but we are not saying to people, step one, two, three, this is what we want you to do. It's not that. So everybody is doing what he or she thinks is correct. And end of the day, we seem to be wanting. And what do we do as community? We blame. Because the foundation is not cool, it's not smooth. So it becomes a challenge. It's survival of the fittest for women. And again, as women, when we are there, we manage to reach. We don't have the culture of sharing. To say, for me to reach here, this is how I went. We don't do that as women. And we talk about rights, but we also talk, don't teach each other as women. To say right is only not on the main side, it's right is also you as an individual that have succeeded to teach the other. So basically that's what is happening. So what I was doing, I'll take people and explain the document in their language. That is what the document. But I feel that I can read and write, I can understand, and I can share. So by doing that, it's easier for the women who don't know these things to move around, to be able to compete, because now it's easier for them based on that. Thank you.
Honorable Manda.
Thank you, Chair. Mm-hmm. Earlier on you said CGE is not visible.
It's not visible.
So I would like to know, how will you ensure that it is visible, especially in rural areas, if you are appointed as a commissioner?
Visibility sometimes is not about money. Visibility is about sharing. I normally watch TV. After each and every soapy that people like Generation, why don't you have a slot that talks about CGE? Like an advert. She said, do you know what CGE is? On radio, we listen to radio. Why don't you have an advert that talks about CGE? Outside in communities, you know, when we come, I'll make an example when I was a member of parliament. Whenever I go to an area, and I say a member of parliament is coming, people want to go all out and do the whole, all this fancy thing. Whereas
sometimes when I go, I'll write and say, the Deputy Secretary General of Disabled People is coming. And there will not be fancy, but I'll have people that we talk to. If today we need to talk about community and disability, people will be there. So for me, I don't want us to do things and we check the environment. I want us to say, is there a group of community there that we can sit and talk about CTE under a tree? What's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong. Talk about CTE in the churches, in the stock fells. How many stock fells do we have? It's a lot. But you never go there out. So, I mean, now I'm saying this because these are some of the things that I've done and I'm still doing. I will call women and say, we've got a party at my house. People like parties. They come. Immediately when they come, I say, before the party starts, because I'll pick up that among people that I move around, some is being abused, but they don't want to talk about it. But immediately when they come to my house, because they know I like to party, the house will be full. And before we even start, I start talking about abuse. They know. One will say, hey, Tandy, you like to lecture me. But I come and we talk about abuse. The goods and the bads, what's there? Why do we keep quiet? Is it good to keep quiet? And if you don't want to keep quiet, you want to talk, what is it that we can assist as women to make sure that you, as an individual, don't allow yourself to be abused? Because once a woman is abused, it means the whole nation is abused. That woman is going to abuse her children. It's going, don't care, going to abuse her husband, because he comes from an environment that is being abused. So that's what we need to do as CGE. Be visible everywhere. And be an activist daily, anytime. Sometimes we take titles and put them on our heads and say, no, I'm not at Parliament today as Member of Parliament. I'm too busy. And that person at that moment wants to speak. So we need to redirect how we do things so that we can be visible. I'm including myself, even if I'm not at CGE. Because as a woman, I need to educate community as our government is saying we must do. It's all of us, not certain people, it's all of us that are affected. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members, and Mama Fulo. Do you have any questions? It's only 3 minutes. Mama Cheke. How long? 3 minutes. So what should we do? One and a half.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is very short. Now, if you are, let me ask the other one. Are you familiar with the laws and adherence to non-binding rules of good governance, codes and standards of commissioners? Can I repeat?
Yes, thank you.
Are you familiar with laws and adherence to non-binding rules of good governance, codes and standards of commissioners?
I've got a knowledge, brief knowledge. I'm not so in depth about, I cannot quote laws, but I know that CGE is a Chapter 9 institution, and it was taken from the Constitution to form a CGE. So what it needs to happen, the do's and don'ts, is that what you're saying?
The mandate
of CGE is to protect, is to make sure that the emancipation of women in gender, not only about women, but is to make sure that they are empowering, is to make sure that there's adherence in terms of the laws, where everybody in South Africa, whether you are a department, whether you are a private sector, issues on gender, and making sure to say you need to, what can I have the word use? You need to differentiate on all these things and when to stop. You cannot just be all over the show because you are a commissioner. You must know your boundaries. That's what you need to know. Your boundaries is to deal with issues of gender. You cannot just jump. If gender affects human rights, for an example, you must go now and take the challenges that are there in terms of gender that affect human rights and take to the relevant people. So everybody has a role to play. You cannot just jump into human rights because you are a gender commissioner. You need to give it to the human rights commissioner. That's how I can explain it in simple terms.
Yeah, Honorable Kaula, Mama Full of Tofane, who showed me some answers.
And Gibonga, Ali Namaful, I answered Cap Cap on your back, this message is cut. Then Funuwas, the German Witting, yes, cut is Uzo the post. Kufike wena kufike uthenga uthola umsebenzi bengade ngihalela or uze ngendlela yokuthi ufuna ukubhekelela abantu besifazane babona behlukumezekile na. Okwesibili ebengifuna ukukwazi la kwena, uzobasiza kanjani abantu basemakhaya njengoba ukwazi ukuxhumana nabo ubafundise ngamalungelo abo ngoba iningi labo abazi nakhona emadolobheni, uzoya kanjani kubona? Ngoba leyo kuzilaya kakhulu kuma-rido inenkinga. Kukhona abantu abanganawo ngisho ugesi. And wena-ke kokugcina, hhayi kabi ngifuna ungizwe. Ma ngithi ngiyalalela lo ngesikhathi ubeka, khombisa sathi nakhona la unakho impela isikili somsebenzi. Kodwa kumina sangathi awugxili kakhulu emsebenzini noma endaweni eyodwa. Anganoma ngabe ngiyaphoxa kuma ngithi ungasithi qaphoqapha ukuthi endaweni ethize, ngoba uma uthi uyabheka into zakho zinhle nama-proposal akho mahle, kodwa manje inkinga awuhlali kulo msebenzi. Zokuthemba kanjani thina ukuthi uma ulana uzokwazi ukuhlala nangiyaronga?
I'm not so sure uthi angihlale emsebenzini, but because I do volunteer work, it's a volunteer work that I do. So maybe that's why I'm all over the show. Because sometimes when people know good to you can assist, even if it's beyond your reach, they'll come and ask you. They'll call and ask you. So in rural areas, I like traveling. So ngiyahika mina ma. So I want to go to an area. I don't know what I'm sitting in a wheelchair. I just go there and hike and go wherever I want to. And I'll reach the destination. Because for me to reach the destination is not about, you know, whatever. How I reach it, as long as I'm doing it. I know in rural areas there are no radios. I know. There's a place in Northern Cape called Bela. You cannot even reach a phone. When you're in that area, meal there. There's no phones there. So you need to be there. Even the language. They don't speak proper Afrikaans. They speak Nama. And it's a language that we don't know as South Africans. So imagine when you are there that you have to try and understand people. So I was just making an example about where we can use what is existing at this moment.
Okay. Thank you. Nakolo, you are the last one. Sorry?
Interpreting. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mom Fuller. I'd like to know, when you heard of this vacancy, what really occurred in your mind? Did you think of your personal interest, or a mere job opportunity, or your family livelihood, or perhaps you thought that you'd like to work and serve the women of this country, who most of them, you know, don't have advocates to champion their cause? And I also listened to you. You elaborated further that you've been, you know, in
question yakho mama Mfulo iphendulele. Ukuzwe kahle because ukhuluma ulwimi aluzwayo. So that's why I iphendulele. Lokho kokuthi siminterpretela umuntu. Interpretela lo ongakhuluma ulwimi lwakithi. Siyabonga. Unaxolo ke tena.
Thank you, Chair. Ma'am, I would like to inquire
your opinion on the independence of Chapter 9 institutions. How far do you think politics, for example, the State of the Nation address, should influence such an institution? That is my first question. And then you've highlighted a number of issues that you have identified. Now, I'm sure you'll agree with me that we don't want token women in positions. We want authentic transformation. We don't want cardboard. We want authentic transformation, especially for black women. How do you think you can contribute to that in your role as a commissioner on the CGE? So the first question was on how you believe politics should influence in the independence of Chapter 9 institutions, and my second question was on
authenticity
and how you believe that can be achieved.
Yes, 10 minutes left.
Okay, thank you so much. In terms of politics are influential, but it depends how. Chapter 9 institutions are independent. But you're talking about the SONA. The SONA can influence, it's normal if it's general. If it influences, say, women must be really looked after, this is what we think. These are the line of how we should talk when it comes to women. For me, that is not influence in the negative way. It's influence in the positive way. Now, it only becomes negative if some of the things that you believe in as an institution that needs to happen as an institution and it's not happening, you know, then it becomes a challenge. But I don't see any clashing of influencing politics because it needs to be a positive influence, not a negative one. In terms of authenticity, how do you measure that? How do you do that? Because you can only do that by doing the right thing. You will see that that person is not a token. Sometimes I'll make an example, you'll be the only person differing based in what you believe or what you believe is right. And then for me, if you are able as a commissioner to differ based on the right thing and the correct thing, it may be right, but it may not be correct. The right and correct thing. Then for me, and the commitment to do that, and going an extra mile, you know, by not just ticking a box, but going an extra mile to make things, for me, that's authentic. For me, that is correct. And do the right thing, believe in the right thing. Fair treatment and honest. Because if I'm honest to you, if I'm honest to myself, it means I'm fair to you. I cannot be fair to you if I'm not honest to myself. So honesty is respect, willing to learn, because on a daily basis you're learning. There's no qualifications around that. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, honorable members, and Mam Mpolo. Thank you for honoring our invitation for this interview. And I hope you've enjoyed yourself. And I think the honorable members didn't crucify you. They were asking fair questions, and you are giving enough opportunity to make your own representation responses. Nobody was saying. But at least we've told you that you've got 25 minutes to respond. Yeah, do you have any question to ask us?
Thank you so much. I know in the CGE, not in the CEC, most of the time we are looking at qualifications. I don't have a degree, I've got nothing.
Fortunately, even our address was not like that.
No, I don't say it was like, I was nominated. You know, I was surprised when I was called, because I didn't know that they nominated me. But I'm just saying this because
there was a call that came to me and said, you don't even have a degree. Funani la. So, but thank you so much. I've enjoyed myself. Yeah, from outside. No, not here. No.
Oh.
It's just individuals. That's
oh.
Not here. But thank you for having me. Thank you so much. I've enjoyed myself.
No,
and I'm happy that I've managed to bring some of the things that I wanted to say to empty. Thank you.
Yeah, fortunately, in terms of our advert, there was no specifications in terms of qualifications. So you don't have to worry yourself about that. Our advert was clear. Yeah, and everybody will be given a fair chance. So thank you very much for honoring our invitation. Have a safe trip. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Honourable members, will now break for tea.
Mm-hmm.
It's for 15 minutes. Thank you very much.